All right, thank you, Kane. 806 FM Talk 106.5. And it is Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Coronavirus cases in our area continue to climb. As you look at those numbers, we also have a breakdown for the state, and you have a breakdown for Mobile County and for Baldwin County, Washington County. Now, Clark County showed up on the board as well.
Yeah, and Conecuh, which also didn't have a case as of yesterday. And as of this morning, we're looking at statewide 1,115 confirmed cases. There have been 32 reported deaths, but right now the ADPH are contributing 17 of those to COVID-19 as they continue to investigate to see the cause of death for so many of those cases. There have been 7,774 total tests, according to the Alabama Department of Public Health. But let's get down to the numbers for each county in our area. Right now, they're saying 60 cases in Mobile County, and they've attributed 3 deaths in our county to COVID-19. 23 cases in Baldwin County, 3 in Washington County, 2 cases now in Clark County, 1 in Escambia, 3 in Monroe County, 4 in Choctaw County, 1 in Conecuh, and 3 in Wilcox County. And that leaves us now with only 5 counties across the entire state that are yet to have a confirmed case of COVID-19. Perry County, and then you look in the southeast portion of the state, Coffee County, Geneva, Barber, and Henry. Those right now are the only counties without confirmed cases. At this point, you have to assume that that's because of a lack of testing or they're waiting on results from tests. But that's what we're looking at statewide and here locally as far as the number of cases.
All right. Also, in the local angle, one that had worried me since weeks ago about public safety and getting in now, 9 Mobile police officers, 7 Mobile fire rescue firefighters testing positive for COVID-19 antibodies. Hopefully, and those, that doesn't mean they're sick right now, but it means they have had it, right? Mm-hmm. Or they've been exposed to it, which worries me about if it gets into a precinct or gets into a fire station, what that means. Also, as we look at the numbers this morning, we said this morning another jobless numbers released last week. It was 1 million.
It was at 2.29, and that has since risen last week's count by 24,000. So they're saying last week we had 3.3 million filings for unemployment, and they just released the newest unemployment claims, and it's about double what Dow Jones had estimated. 6.6 million new claims for this week.
Gosh.
That brings to total 10 million Americans who have filed for unemployment over the past 2 weeks. And Dow Jones surveyed some economists over the last week. They were estimating about 3.1 million to be this week's count. But we are at 6.6 million for this week alone, and 10 million people have filed for unemployment over the last 2 weeks.
Wow. Wow. Some very sobering numbers out there, whether you're looking at cases for COVID-19 in our area. You're looking at the cases of the sailors that have tested positive. We talked about public safety in the biggest way. We talked about the sailors. We're going to talk to Robert Kennedy Jr. about it. And also those jobless numbers. Wow. As we get started, let's bring in our friend Robert Kennedy Jr. and talk more about this. And I do want to get to the naval side of this, obviously, with your time in the Navy. But I want to start off with these jobless numbers. That is sobering.
Yeah, good morning, Sean. Good morning, Bill. And how you guys doing?
Doing all right. But that, what a tough number.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I couldn't imagine being the person sitting back right now trying to forecast these numbers from week to week. We are in such a different space than what we were typically in. So any of the references that you would use to calculate the number just aren't even applicable right now. But yes, definitely sobering to see it increase at an exponential rate. And if we're talking about a flattening of the curve, that probably applies here as well. So they're probably going to continue to jump for a while before they start to go back down.
Yeah, you and I were talking about that last week and talking about some fiscal policy on this, and that, you know, the government is trying here with the CARES Act and others to try to flatten the curve the other way, right, on jobless numbers and a dip in the economy. It seems to me that maybe this started with the layoffs earlier than I thought, or some business owners out there and some companies are already forecasting and just laying off people before it. If you're a restaurant or something, you're shut down, I get it. But some of these bigger companies are already laying off. It's off projections, even without, I guess, digesting what could come out of the stimulus efforts from the federal government. It seems like they're just already shedding the jobs.
Yeah, I think we actually have to put this conversation in two buckets. So the first bucket, which is the problem that most folks are experiencing right now, is simply an issue of cash flow. And I know you know this better than anybody, being in a world where you make money based upon advertising, that you probably have situations where you've actually already done the advertising, but you're still waiting for the check to come in.
Sure.
And so if companies don't have balance sheets that are strong and they don't have a lot of cash, they may actually be laying off people quicker than they need to, just because they don't want to go into a situation where they're making the situation worse for themselves than it actually is. The second bucket extends off of what came out of the CARES Act, and this idea that you can apply for a loan, use that loan to fund payroll, and then if you basically prove that you've used the loan to pay for payroll, that it would ultimately be forgiven. Well, that's a good thing. I think you and I had consensus on that.
Absolutely.
Last week. But, you know, I was still, you know, going through the forms, looking at the blocks that need to be filled out. Haven't had my first conversation with the bank yet. I don't know how many of my clients have as well, but all of that takes time. And so if you're running against the clock and you don't have that cash flow coming in from the invoice that was from the month of February, for example, you can see how those two things can compound relatively quickly and cause people to make some decisions that we know aren't in the best interest of the individual employee, at least at this point.
You know, and looking at the one-time payment here, which I think if we go off what Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said last week, we now should be within 2 weeks of those checks being direct deposited or for others being mailed out. But that one-time payment, it doesn't turn this around. If you have now in 2 weeks' time 10 million people unemployed, it's going to take a lot more than that.
Yeah, it's interesting that that was one of the arrows that came out of the quiver that was launched, and we know that in this trying time that any money is going to be better than no money, but it's really not going to address this larger issue of people not having a consistent paycheck.
That's for sure. I want to get your perspective on, because we're the maritime side of COVID-19,
yes.
And we had talked earlier about the cruise ship issue, but let's talk about a aircraft carrier, right, that has got a captain pleading to get people off his ship onto the island of Guam because of the cases on there. You know what it's like on there. What are the confines? How could you have operated on ships and kept 6 feet of social distance?
Not possible. And one thing I need to say here off the top, the commanding officer of the USS Theodore Roosevelt, which is the ship that we are talking about right now, is one of my classmates from the Naval Academy.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, so we've been having this conversation, obviously the public one that we're having now, but we're having an additional conversation just within our class website. And pretty much to a person, a group of individuals who are on both left and the right, there's consistency in supporting him in writing the letter. Now, there is some philosophical conversations about who leaked the letter to the media and whether or not there should be accountability for that. But the sentiment of what he did and what he communicated is exactly what you want the best of us doing, which is ultimately doing what we need to do in order to protect our sailors.
You've said that in the past, too, that sentiment is one thing, but you're still a Navy man. You're still a sailor. You say there's a chain of command and a way to do things, and I imagine you would not support the leaking. Even though the sentiment you might support, the leaking is what you probably take exception to. Am I right?
Absolutely, and it comes under the umbrella of what we refer to as good order and discipline, right? So even when we talk about some things that that I experienced very personally, where I had to do something in the public, it was public within the chain of command. It wasn't going to the New York Times, the Washington Post. And so it looks like he did everything the right way. Of course, the subsequent investigations will tease that out. Having said that, going back to your original question, it is impossible to keep social distancing on a ship. So just think about something as simple as the way that berthing is constructed. So I was an officer, and as an officer, I shared a stateroom with another officer. And so think about when you watch television and you see the size of like a prison jail cell, take that and cut it in about half, and that's the size of a typical stateroom that you're sharing with another individual.
That's right? The officer's stateroom is that small.
That's the officer's stateroom.
Wow.
Right? Now, if you transition and you go into enlisted berthing, It looks exactly like what you would have seen in those old World War II movies, where you literally have sailors stacked two or three high in bunks. And so in the entire ship, your safety distance is about the 6 inches that your body is occupying on your rack, and then the overhead of that space. There is absolutely no way that you could be in a berthing space and not literally be on top of each other. One of the things that we used to experience quite often was just common cold, the flu, and as soon as it hit the vessel, it ran rampant through the vessel. And you're talking about a space that people are constantly cleaning, but there's simply no way to get the space required to prevent something from spreading like wildfire.
Robert, as far as getting these sailors off the ship safely, it's not as easy as, say, disembarking a cruise ship. I mean, you got weapons on board. I think I read a nuclear reactor. They're not going to be able to take everyone off the ship, right?
No. That was not the underlying assumption from the letter. So normally what you have is you have duty sections, right? So whenever a ship is operational, there is never a point in time when the ship does not have some minimum staffing on it. And so essentially what the commanding officer was presenting as his solution was to go down to a minimum staffing level so that you could get the people who are sick off the ship. The people who are on that are well can spread out so that you have more distance. And you basically operate at minimum staffing such that if something was to spin up in the world and then a whole bunch of sick people had to get on the ship and you had to go to sea because we needed to fight, that we would do that. It wasn't taking the ship being completely empty.
And that's one of the things that worries me about this and going forward is readiness, right? That is your job, to be ready to fight at any point in any of the branches. And I think about, and I don't know what to believe out of China, but if they're on the backside of this, and you know their Navy maybe doesn't have the number of cases, while we borrow money from them and find out tariff debates and all that, they are on the seas. They're our main rival in the Pacific, without a doubt. Correct?
I'm not sure that I would say that they are at that stage at this point in time. But there is definitely a trend line that is saying as you continue to go forward that their capabilities are going to increase. But I don't think that's a concern. At least it's not a concern today.
Would you have concern? Lord knows, I don't usually delve in the doomsday stuff. But if you had this go completely rampant through the Navy, to me, if you're looking at it from outside another nation, we are weakened. Our military would be weakened. Same way I worry about public safety here at a local level.
So are you asking me, so if we were to take the numbers that we had right now,
right,
and you talked about, 25% of the people are infected, mm-hmm. And of those 20%, 80% have mild to moderate symptoms, 20% have chronic symptoms, and then, you know what I mean, 5% or whatever.
And I'm not really talking about people, you know, it's not the fatality stuff, it's just, but if people are, let's say it's not even ventilator stuff, any of that, they're just really sick, you know what I'm saying? They got mm-hmm. like 2 weeks of being really sick. It makes it tough for them to man their battle stations.
I think you would actually be surprised. The mentality is such that even if you're really sick,
you
would
it.
Still end up being able to perform your watch.
I like that. That makes me feel better.
I'll give you a personal case in point. So back in 1994, I was in a car accident. We're coming back to the ship. I went back to the ship, stood my watch all day because it was a duty day, and then went to the hospital the next day. You know what I mean? And then ended up being on light duty after that. There's a focus and intensity among our sailors. They are truly the best of us. And obviously the person who's going to be on a ventilator isn't going to be able to do their duty. But with that exception, if we actually needed to put an aircraft carrier at sea and launch and recover aircraft, I have every confidence that the sailors on that ship will be capable.
All right, let's do this. We're going to run to the break. Coming back, more with Robert Kennedy Jr. and talk about a couple other issues. But, I mean, it's interesting to get his perspective. I mean, as a sailor, retired Navy, two different two different commitments to the Navy and his time on those ships. That's one thing. I mean, you talk about social distancing and what we're worried about down at the Walmart. Imagine being on a ship. Hey, thanks, Kane. 826 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you along and good to talk to our buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. And talk about a couple things here. We start off with the discussion of the aircraft carrier here. And you, if people didn't check that out earlier, you said as an officer, the stateroom where y'all would have the most room was how close in quarters in your deployment?
Yeah, I was saying that the biggest visual would be, think about the prison cells you sit in, where you see two people in a prison cell, and then make that smaller, right? So literally, we were basically right on top of each other.
Wow. All right.
And then the sailors in the enlisted berthing were stacked two and three high. So there's just no way you could physically even sleep and not literally be right on top of somebody.
So that's the situation for our sailors. What about for us back here, civilians at home? Stay-at-home orders, I mean, it looks like as of yesterday, Florida, Mississippi, you know, with their full state, and they may have a different nomenclature for each one, but essentially the same thing. Tennessee is debating it. I don't know about Georgia. When do you think Governor Kay Ivey calls one for the entire state?
I think she will, but unfortunately, I think we'll be wrapping up the tail end like we do on so many different topics. And the reason why I bring that up is just think about us here on the Gulf Coast, right, and how close we are to Mississippi and Florida. You know, we have the tendency to think about this from a state and a county perspective, but really, you know, the virus doesn't care where the state line is.
Right.
So I think at least at this point in time, we should all be on the same sheet of music and we should all be operating the same way. I know there's a term that people like to use from time to time and say, hey, we're not California, we're not New York or whatever, but the virus doesn't care. So right now, I think we need to be operating in as cautious a space as possible. And if that means that the government needs to put us in a stay-at-home posture, so be it.
And the question, though, you look at this, and when the governor spoke on Friday and Chief Health Officer Scott Harris spoke, you know, they talked about essential and non-essential businesses, but they left... They brought up more questions, I think, than they answer. Some, like if you say, okay, all hair salons are shut down, okay, that's fine. But you say, but grocery stores, well, they've shut down a smaller place that has groceries, but a big box store can still be open, you know. And that, listen, if the shop owner in the smaller grocery store locally owned can keep people separated out 6 feet, then they should be able to have the same rights as the big box store.
Yeah, I agree. Well, to think about it from the stores that are proximate to my area, it's going to be the Publix in Saraland, it's going to be the Greer's and Pritchard, the Piggly Wiggly and Pritchard. And there's not nearly as much traffic there, and there's going to be a much smaller risk than it is if I'm at the, you know, the Walmart in Sims at Shillinger and Moffitt.
Right.
Or if I'm at, you know, Costco out there by Hank Aaron Stadium. So I have a tendency to agree with you on that one.
All right, and before we wrap up, I know you want to give a shout-out to what, you know, we talk about the American ingenuity and spirit and the availability of distilleries and wineries to pivot into the hand sanitizer business. We've got one right here in our backyard.
Yes. Perdido Vineyards, which is right there in North Baldwin, is owned by a gentleman by the name of Jim Eddins, who is a Naval Academy graduate, class of 1957.
Wow.
During the time frame of John McCain, as a matter of fact, just to give you a perspective on that.
Wow.
But he saw a need, and his team was manufacturing wine and vinegar, and they repurposed and they started manufacturing hand sanitizer. So
good for them.
That's just a local Alabama, Southwest Alabama company that's doing what they can to help us all out, keep us safe. And I just wanted to give him a shout out, thank him for his service. Ben and his service now.
Well said. And as always, thank you for your service and appreciate your time. And we'll talk next week.
All right. Take care now.
Robert Kennedy Jr. joining us right here on Mobile Mornings. Coming back, Rob Holbert from Landyap checks in. Plus, we'll grab your text at 343-0106.
Eight 36 on FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. It's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning.
So we've been talking about this great deal from GM for a while now, and not many days left to get it. Tell us, What's out there if we come to McConnell Automotive?
Oh, we've got 0 for 84, 120 days they defer the payment. I mean, it's a heck of a deal. Think about it. 0% for 84 months on most of the stuff we got in stock here. And don't forget, check all the stuff out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. And just give us a buzz, 251-476-4141. We'll even bring you the car to your house, let you look at it. We took one down to Gulf Shores yesterday, and a lady looked at it, loved it, came by and bought it yesterday afternoon. So we got, we'll do anything we can to help y'all out. We got, like I said the other day, got Orlando walking around spraying all the cars and keeping them clean. Got a great environment here, so y'all come check them out and give us a buzz, 251-476-4141.
Any chance you got any of those Mardi Gras trucks left?
I'm sitting here looking at the back lot, and I see one.
Ooh, got to get out there fast to get that one.
Yeah, somebody needs to come on by here and get it.
That's for sure. We appreciate it, Louis.
Thank you.
That's Louis Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, or online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, y'all say hello to Rob Holbert with Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Hey, man.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. A lot to talk about here. I do want to start off with looking at the cover of the most recent Lanyap. I'm looking on the digital side here because I'm a subscriber.
Here you go.
And I'm looking here, though. I see a cover. I see two covers. I see one that looks like people are having a street party, maybe a cocktail here or something like that. And then I see one that shows people in PPE doing COVID-19 testing. Which cover goes with which county?
Well, we right now, Sean, we had to pull back. We're one per week. We don't do two right now. We're not able to do Baldwin and Mobile.
So what am I supposed to decide with these two pictures?
The one you're seeing that is the cover is people at the street party. And the story is basically about, you know, life in the time of COVID, basically what people are doing. How are we still being, still living and making our day-to-day lives and still trying to socially distance, et cetera. That particular thing was a street party that people had, but basically, everybody stayed up on their porches and just kind of went one at a time and got food and kind of hollered at each other across the street.
Which is, I mean, in some neighborhoods like mine, that's not really different from, a non-COVID period. So
yeah, they said the main thing, a lot of it is, not going into each other's homes, that kind of stuff. Obviously, not, nobody's hugging each other, that kind of thing. There's kind of just one slice of what's going on. Obviously, it's not the most important part, which is fighting the virus, but it is still part of what we're doing.
All right, well, let's talk about this, and I do want to point out too, if hopefully maybe after the news break we can get to Gabe's story that y'all is outside the paywall, that I want y'all to read. Talked about it yesterday on the midday show. Is one of these tougher questions. If you're somebody who gets upset with pork being thrown in any bill, let alone one as important as the CARES Act, at the same time you support, progress for Mobile to see the what Gabe pointed out here was added into the CARES Act by Senator Shelby. But we'll get to that in a second. Let's talk about what's happening here locally. You've got Florida now with a full stay-at-home order, and I know there's other names, I guess. There's semantically, there's some different names by different states, but there's stay-at-home orders or shelter-in-place. It's all basically the same thing. Mississippi's got one of those. Florida's got one of those. Tennessee's talking about it. What about Alabama? I mean, are we essentially at that now here, or what do you think? You think the governor moves to do something formal?
I mean, I think we're as close to it as you can be without calling it that. I mean, I don't know what, I don't know what more... I mean, I guess you could say, well, we could stay-at-home order, and we're going to have armed people out on the street keeping you in your house. But, I mean, I know people who are in areas where there's stay-at-home orders. They're still going outside and doing things. I feel like at this point that's just more or less let's Me Too-ism, feel good, that we're doing, not to be criticized for it or to get a D on a report card for what we're doing or something like that. I don't know what more we're going to do at this point. You've got... we've clamped down on the grocery stores. We're doing those things. I mean, I've kind of been a firm believer all along that we need to look at things a little bit differently from place to place and not try to apply. apply the same things to every part of the country. But, you know, that, I'm probably in the minority in that, but I just think some parts of it, you know, again, we've got 6.6 million people that filed for unemployment this week.
Yeah, now you combine the 2 weeks, I mean, we're over, you know, 10 million, over 10 million unemployed.
I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to put the economy in front of people's lives, but there's going to be, if we have another disaster after this, that is a economic disaster. I'm not talking about inconvenience. I'm talking about a disaster that is, you know, that's going to last for years. You know, that's a big thing to take on. I think we need to do everything we can to not have that happen as well.
It's a fair debate. I've said this while I'm, you know, I find myself in the middle of the road where I get run over mostly, but I think this is real. I think we have to have a response to keep this from spreading. At the same time, even by the stats that for those people think the on the most liberal end, the number of Americans that will either contract COVID-19 or be a close family member of it, you know, we're talking about maybe 30% of the population, but 100% of the population is affected by this economy. So, I mean, there is a reason to try to find some balance here.
Yeah, it's you know, it's sort of the Mr. Spock sort of thing. Do the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few? And I'm not saying it's a few, but it does get to the point where you say, you know, there's real damage, and there's real damage to people's lives, and it's not insignificant. And, you know, it's not, I mean, I hate to keep going back to, I know people really get furious when you talk about flu stats, but, you know, on an average year, we lose 55,000 people to the flu and we don't do anything. And when you start talking about, you know, the order of magnitude of things that you're doing, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing social distancing. I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing some of the things we're doing, but, you know, can we do this again? I mean, should
is that,
I mean,
is it, that one of your
is after this happens, should we ever do this again? Should we do this? I mean, if there's a pandemic again next year, should we shut down the economy again? Can we handle it as a country?
Yeah, I don't know that. And you're saying just because of the weakened status that we will be in coming out of this?
Yes, I think you know, I mean, I just feel like there's, you know, as usual, everything kind of breaks down politically, and you know, people sort of line up in their tribes and say, well, you know, I believe this, but there seems to be this attitude that government's just going to write a check and we'll just be out of this and everything will be back to normal. And I beg to differ. And I mean, you know, we're looking at another month of this. You know, it's April 2nd. We're going all the way through April in this probably. And so, you know, what's it going to be like in a month?
I don't know, but you know, one of the dangers here, and I have no way to substantiate this, but it's just a feeling that the efforts being taken now may be their own worst enemy. Let's just for a second and say the social distancing, this stay-at-home orders, these things are having success in stemming the spread of COVID-19. Well, you get down to the end of this period and people say, look, it was much to do about nothing. We had all these great draconian measures put on the people and it wasn't anything major. When if we could get in the, you know, the time machine and go back and replay it without doing that, how many cases would we be looking at? Would we overwhelm hospitals and medical facilities? It's an unknown, but it's a you know, people will be armchair quarterbacking it down the road and say, look, it wasn't much.
Absolutely, there's going to be armchair quarterbacking of it, and there's no doubt. But it's, you know, I think you look at it already, and the, you know, discussions of 2 million people dying and that kind of stuff is off the table. You know, and I mean, you know, the realities are that at this point, Sean, I mean, when people are getting it at this point, they're getting it. It's, I mean, we are all taking risks when we go outside at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We're all aware. We all make a choice. And I mean, I know that sounds hard-hearted, but we're all making choices at this point. And, you know, obviously there are people who have to work and have to take care of these things, but you know, a lot of us are making choices and seeing other people and being around other people. And those are things we have to weigh in as well. And, you know, it's a tough thing to deal with, but I think when you get done with it, we may feel good that things did not turn out as badly as we were told they would be from the beginning. And, you know, we can say, okay, well, was that accurate or not? I don't know. But then after that, how bad are things going to be from the standpoint of everybody being unemployed? I mean, 30% unemployment is something we've never seen. We have no idea what that even looks like.
Yeah, I want to talk about that right when we get back from the news break. Talking to Rob Holbert from Landyap, landyapmobile.com, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Talking with our buddy Rob Holbert from Landyap. And also, let me direct you to the front page of FMTalk1065.com, where you can check out the online opinion poll question brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. How has your business been affected by the state's coronavirus shutdown? 8% say no effect. 32% say minor effect, 60% of y'all say major effect, and 0% have said they've had to close. You can vote online, front page of FMTalk1065.com. Just look for the 1-800-GOT-JUNK logo. Speaking of which, that's my buddy Trey, and they are still working. They are picking up junk. You know, what's happening is, with people being quarantined, staying at home, more time to see projects that you need to do. And if those involve getting rid of junk, cleaning things out, I got the guy for you. The guy we use here at the station, I've used in my personal life as well. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He's also a buddy of mine. Been doing it 12 years now in Mobile and Baldwin County. They practice social distancing. Also, you can pay with a credit card. You can do stuff remotely. He told me a story the other day. He said, Sean, I even do deals for people that are not even there. They could be somebody out of town, maybe an out-of-town lander, whatever. They can drive to a site, assess the junk, check back with the client, give them a bid. If the client says yes, they get the work done and get out of there. It's just that easy. You need to go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll set an appointment time with you, an actual day and an actual time, because they realize maybe your schedule's not as busy as it was, but it's still busy, and you got to work around all these different things. They're going to be there. They're going to help you out. You got junk inside the house, outside the house, storage unit. You got junk anywhere. You need it gone. You've identified it now. Get it gone. Use 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, return to our conversation with Rob Holbert from Landyap. And you were talking about the 30% unemployment numbers. That's some of the predictions made here. And this idea of, I mean, let's talk about what it is. It's an idea of balancing cases of COVID and possible long-term effects, because, I mean, we talk about fatalities, but even people that get better, there are some people that have long-term reduction mm-hmm. in lung capacity and those things. So that's a real part of this as well. Versus 30% unemployment, 100% of Americans feeling the pinch from this economy. If you're in the Oval Office, what do you do, Rob? How do you balance that seesaw?
Man, it's a tough job. There's no good answer to this, and I'm not trying to say that I have an easy answer to it by any stretch. And when I say pinch from the economy, you know, I'm not talking about a pinch from the economy. You know, I'm not talking about, oh, geez, there's a recession, we got to cut back a little bit, tighten our belts. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about wholesale economic destruction for a large percentage of society. That part is what I really worry about. And, you know, watch next week. I mean, people's eyes were bugging out, you know, watching TV this morning at the 6.6 million number of, you know, of unemployment claims. That, you know, just freaking out over that. Wait till next week when it's 9, you know, or 10 or whatever it's going to be. It's going to be worse. And it's just, you know, that's, you got another month of just of continuing stuff like this. It's going to be bad. And I mean, we have, as I've said, I mean, I think we've got sort of two disasters, and, you know, we can't just ignore the second disaster as well.
No, fair enough. I think that, I mean, that's kind of how we balance our seesaw around here, watching the economy, watching small business, and also watching the health concerns. Speaking of the health concerns, were you satisfied the other day at the presser where Mayor Stimson said 50% of the, whatever, the hospital capacity is open here, 50% of beds?
No, I mean, I'm still unsatisfied that the Mobile County Health Department refuses to give out the actual numbers. They refuse to do it. Dr. Eichhold has just withheld these numbers. He won't even give them to the mayor. I don't understand it. I think it is, you know, we are trying to make decisions in this community. You know, as I said, you know, you can't tell me the same things are happening in every single place. They're not. I mean, some places are different. You can't expect a place with 12 million people in a place with, in a county with 3,000 people to have exactly the same experience and probably need the same exact things, but we're treating it that way. And, you know, at least it helps when we can watch numbers and see what's happening and kind of get an idea of where we are. Are we doing enough? Are we not doing enough? Are things going to be okay here? I mean, that's one of the things we can do locally, at least, is understand that. Everybody's got to kind of take care of things in their backyard first.
Yeah, it's interesting, and this is more not here locally, but I've heard this at a national level, and specifically to the state of New York and the city, is that the mayor should have been better prepared, the governor should have been better prepared in New York, or the federal government should have been better prepared, having more ventilators and all these things. Pandemics can come in many forms. I don't know if it's fair to say, I mean, who knows what to stock up on, let alone, you know, people, the government is broke at so many levels, and if you're going to have them stock up for every possibility, is that a reasonable thing to ask of them?
But, you know, it's funny. I have a friend who does some contracting work with the government, and he told me 3 or 4 years ago, he said, you know, the government stockpiles of things. A lot of them are in really poor shape because the government doesn't know what it has or hasn't kept track of it. And then, you know, he sent me a story yesterday basically saying exactly that the national stockpile of ventilators, a lot of them don't work. You know, a lot of them are in bad shape, that kind of thing. And it's, you know, so even when you got it, you know, it is kind of difficult to say, okay, we're going to collect all these ventilators and we're going to keep them in top-notch shape every year in case this happens. But what if the next, you know, what if the next pandemic is something completely different?
Right. That's what I'm getting at. How can you predict?
You know, this one is, you know, I mean, we already have the run on toilet paper on that one. So, you know, I don't know what, it's hard. It is hard to know what to do. And it is hard. I think we make it harder I think secrecy always makes things more difficult for the government and makes it more difficult for the people. And I think that's a lot of what we see with, you know, you don't get a lot of real numbers. You get a lot of percentages and discussions about things being overrun, but you don't get hardcore numbers from a lot of people, and I don't really understand why. And it's sort of, I think the attitude is like, well, we don't want to tell the public what the numbers are because they can't handle it, or they won't, you know, they can't handle the truth, whatever it is. I don't know. But I think it would make it easier for us anyway to know going in. At the very minimum, you ought to know what you have, and you ought to be able to say, this is what we've got, and, you know, these are the numbers we're worried about, you know, getting over this number. We're worried about having this many hospital beds taken, this many ventilators taken up.
Well, you know, they say it in the military side, and this is a war of sorts, that you fight the next war with the technology and the lessons of the last war, mm-hmm. which are often antiquated by the time the next event comes up. I have just a minute left here. Tell folks about getting signed up and getting Lanyap online.
Well, like everybody, you know, our customers, our advertisers that have kept us going for 18 years, our local businesses primarily, and they're getting crushed by this. A lot of them are closed. A lot of them, you know, most of them can't do any business. And therefore, you know, as you know, Sean, advertising is one of those things that's not a necessity, and it gets cut pretty quick. And so, you know, we're feeling that pretty badly as well. And you know, one of the things people can do to ensure the newspaper and keep, you know, our guys are out there working and publishing stuff around the clock is you know, subscribe to Lanyap. It's 21 cents a day. Not expensive. I counted up yesterday, we put out over 15 million papers, free papers in our 18 years here.
Wow.
So, you know, that's a lot of free papers out there for the community. And you know, 21 cents a day isn't a lot. I don't think most people would miss it. I get chastised from some people who tell me that, you know, that's cavalier to say people won't miss 21 cents, but I don't think most people will.
Okay.
And it's a lot of information.
How do they sign up? Right now, tell them how to do it.
You go to buy.lanyapmobile.com, and that will take you directly to the sign-up page. And it's easy as pie, man. And you can just go on there, and you get all the breaking news. You can look at all the archives. And you can check out everything we do.
Rob, as always, I appreciate your time. We'll check back with you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. Rob Holbert checking in, and we're out. Be back at noon today for Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next.